Now let us read in God's most holy word, and before we read our psalm, we are going to read the passage that it is suggested inspired the psalm, which is found in the second book of Samuel, chapter 5, and reading from the 17th verse. The second book of Samuel in the Old Testament, and the 5th chapter, and reading from the 17th verse. When the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over all Israel, he had first been anointed as the head of his tribe of Judah at Hebron, but now he is anointed king over all Israel at Jerusalem, they went up in full force to search for him. But David heard about it and went down to his stronghold. Now the Philistines had come and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. So David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I go and attack the Philistines? Will you hand them over to me?" And the Lord answered him, "Go, for I will surely hand the Philistines over to you." So David went to Baal Perazim, and there he defeated them. Doesn't say how. He said, "As waters break out, the Lord has broken out against my enemies before me." So that place was called Baal Perazim. The Philistines abandoned their idols there, and David and his men carried them off. That's to say, they fled. Once more the Philistines came up and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. So David inquired of the Lord, and he answered, "Do not go straight up, but circle round behind them and attack them in front of the balsam, or the mulberry, or the aspen trees. As soon as you hear the sound of marching in the tops of the balsam trees, move quickly, because that will mean the Lord has gone out in front of you to strike the Philistine army." So David did as the Lord commanded him, and he struck down the Philistines all the way from Gibeon to Giza. Psalm 124. If the Lord had not been on our side, let Israel say, let Israel repeat, says David, after me. If the Lord had not been on our side when men attacked us, when their anger flared against us, they would have swallowed us alive. The flood would have engulfed us. The torrent would have swept over us. The raging waters would have swept us away. Praise be to the Lord, who has not let us be torn by their teeth. We have escaped like a bird out of the fowler's snare. The snare has been broken, and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord, the Maker of heaven and earth. Amen. May God bless to us His most holy word. Psalm 124. I want to keep in mind all through this series of psalms, songs of ascent, that these songs are pilgrim songs, so that we may imagine pilgrims on their way to Jerusalem for the great feasts of the Jewish religion, on their way recalling some of the high moments of their history. This psalm may be in King David's very words. They certainly sound like it, don't they? But for a fuller understanding of the occasion, we read this morning the account in 2 Samuel chapter 5, 17 to 25, of the Philistines' attempt to wipe out David and his people when they heard he had been made king of all the 12 tribes of Jerusalem, not just his own tribe of Judah at Hebron. The Philistines went up in full force to search for him, and David asked the Lord whether he should attack them, and if so, would the Lord give him victory over them? And the Lord said yes to both questions. Go, and I will surely hand them over to you. And you see, in both the passage from 2 Samuel chapter 5 and our psalm, we learn, I believe, the biggest lesson that any servant or soldier of Christ can ever learn. Namely, that the real battle is never ours, but always the Lord's. If the battle were ours, we would be on our own, because the Lord will never fight our battles, only his own. Does that sound wrong or hard? Surely not. It's true anyway. He is a jealous God, and he's jealous for his own glory. Well, who wouldn't be, being such a three-in-one God as he is? Isn't it right that he should be jealous for his own glory? But then, does that sound as if he doesn't care for us very much if we go off on our own? No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean that at all. But it is just that to go off on our own, and he wants us to see this, is always disastrous. For we are bound to him, bound by bonds that are everlasting, that won't break and can't break. We are bound to him. And as Jesus says so plainly, without me ye can do nothing. And that puts it fairly. We can do nothing without him. And you see, and it just occurs to me, thinking of all those battles, those encounters that I discussed with the children, if Israel in each case had gone ahead by themselves without the aid of God and without his wisdom and guidance and power, how many defeats would they have suffered? Maybe in almost every instance they would have been defeated without the Lord, because without me ye can do nothing. And the amazing thing, you see, about this David is that probably being one of the greatest military commanders and strategists the world has ever seen, not to say one of the greatest poets and musicians too, he wouldn't move an inch without the Lord's consent. That was the size of his greatness, that he knew and this is the size of true greatness, that he knew a greater. I suppose military historians would say that there has hardly ever been as arrogant a commander in modern times as Field Marshal Montgomery. We have often heard his rasping tones, haven't we? But he was the general, you see, above all in the Second World War, who sat in his caravan reading his Bible before he went out to battle. And don't you think a great deal of what was regarded, and still may be regarded, as his arrogance was in fact the assurance that he gained from God and from his word? Is it not that that made him so sure of himself? The critics of fundamentalists, as we're called, the critics are constantly saying that these fundamentalists are so sure of themselves. Yes. But it's not sure of ourselves that we are, but of God and his word, which we take to ourselves and lean on. That was the great word which came at the climax of our service last Sunday evening. Twice in one verse, in hymn 517, which starts, you remember, so aggressively, "Fight the good fight with all thy might." We have this word, lean, lean. "Cast care aside, and on thy guide lean, and his mercy will provide. Lean, and the trusting soul shall prove Christ is its life, and Christ its love." Lean, lean. And here's this great young man, David, one of the most gifted of all men, just anointed, not only head of his tribe, but king of the entire Israelite nation. Here's this David sitting there, in his cave apparently, saying, his stronghold, saying, "Lord, shall I go and attack the Philistines?" What do you think of that? Is this at all like an impetuous young man, such as, say, Alexander the Great, who was suddenly given, or who seized supreme authority over not only his own nation, but over half the world, most of the known world of his day? No. David was not like Alexander, who came to such a sad end. No, no need here of the Lord to say to David, as you remember he said to Gideon, that we'll come back to next week. No need of the Lord to say to David, as he said to Gideon, "Your army is too big. Reduce it from 32,000 to 10,000, and then to 300, lest you attribute your victory to your own efforts and not to the Lord's." But why? The psalm begins with this very attitude of submission. Oh, we should see this. If the Lord had not been on our side, says David to his people. And then he stops and he says to them, "Go on after me." If the Lord had not been on our side when men attacked us and their anger flared up against us, they would have swallowed us whole like a monster in one gulp. That's what the language means there. The floods, he goes on to say, would have engulfed us. The torrents would have swamped us. The raging water swept us clear away. And you see, nothing could be more categorical than that. Lord, you did it all. You did it all on your own. How often Israel had to say that, as I was telling the children. It was purely your victory, Lord. Not ours at all, but yours. And you see, as I'm never tired of saying about Israel's battles, they are practically never battles of arms. Certainly not primarily so. But of some other kind of warfare. Call it psychological sometimes, or spiritual, or even phenomenological. that is to say, disasters of nature against their enemies. You see, this spirit of dependence on the Lord is almost laughable if we were to share it with worldly people. I'm sure that worldly people often think the things we do are ridiculous. You sometimes see people on their way in Summer Street to or from that nasty pub up the road. Yes, that's what it's called. Have you been up Summer Street? That's what it's called. Nasty is written large above the doorway. Horrid. And crowds up and down. And sometimes they look at us coming in or going out of our building. And sometimes you can see astonishment on their faces, as if to say, what would they be doing in there? No drink? Or dancing? Or illicit sex? What would they do in there? And we could tell them what we are doing, but they wouldn't believe it. We could say, we are helping God to run the universe. Well, a bit of it anyway. Are we not? We are ensuring that the battle for righteousness all over the world, including the former Soviet Union, is being won by him. Oh yes, that's one of the things which may be concealed in our psalm, you see. God needed David, even if David deferred to the Lord in everything. Without me ye can do nothing, said Jesus. But we could also say to the Lord Jesus with a twinkle in our eye, and Jesus would fully appreciate this, for of all things he has a sense of humor. We might say to him, without us, Lord, what could you do? You need us too. So, you see, we are essential to him. But essential as servants, not masters. One is your master, even Christ, and you are all brothers. Indeed, one of the problems of modern life is that everyone wants to be his own master. And there are not sufficient servants to go round. That's part of the trouble. There are not sufficient servants to go round. Even to clean our streets. Who would be a scaffy cleaning the streets. As if that were a bad thing, to clean the streets. It's a Christian thing, isn't it, to clean anything? But you see, the very word scavenger has almost passed out of our vocabulary. You have to give fancy names to very menial tasks to encourage people to undertake them. Street orderlies. We all want to be big. And yet here is David, this great man, one of the greatest in history, sitting in his cave, and Monty in his caravan, doing the same thing, saying to the Lord, "Shall I, Lord, or shan't I? You say, you are the boss." But you see, the very terms of David's escape are humbling. He's not ashamed to view it from the most humiliating point of view. And you see, instead of our being torn by grinding teeth by some ravenous wolf passing by, as we are trapped in a fowler's snare and about to be devoured, along comes an animal lover and opens the snare, whatever kind of snare it is, and frees us, poor little bird that we are, made to fly through the air in perfect freedom. He frees us to fly into our natural habitat, the air, and sing our song as we realize what we have been saved from, a devouring enemy. Our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth. And you see, the animal lover who saves the poor bird is Jesus, lover of our souls. And so, you see, we have not only the fair air to fly in and soar gloriously through, but we have a nest. Jesus, lover of my soul, let me to thy bosom fly. David in another psalm says, "Now I know that the Lord saves his anointed. He answers him from heaven with the saving power of his right hand." And you know, I think, if I may say so thankfully, our session clerk may be saying that in his heart today, who for the umpteenth time has been saved from perils that have lurked by the way. And we're thankful. But you see, this other psalm that I'm quoting, Psalm number 20, adds, "Some trust in chariots and some in horses. But we trust in the name of the Lord our God. They," that is our enemies, "are brought to their knees and fall. But we rise up and stand firm," says the psalmist. "O Lord, give victory to the king," it ends. Aye, but the victory to King David is given because he sat down and spoke to the Lord and said, "Lord, shall I or shall I not? You are the boss." And the Lord said, "Go, and I will surely hand the Philistines over to you." And of course, as you know, the world is full of Philistines today, wreckers of all that has been so laboriously built up through the years and centuries of our Christian civilization. And despite all that is being done by statesmen today. And we must not forget that it is an answer to prayer. Despite all that is being done by moral and godly statesmen today to consolidate the gains of the ending of the Cold War, there is the greed of gain that men may consume all that they hoard up on their own self-destructive lusts. The ruination of our Christian civilization today is largely due to drink and the violence of all kinds which results from its excessive misuse, along with the concomitant evil and vice of the appalling preoccupation with sex, which today is deliberately enticing our young people under the fear of AIDS to indulge their youthful passions as freely as they wish, as long as they do it safely in respect of this deadly trouble. I'm glad that most of our teenagers are at Crieff this weekend and won't hear what I'm saying now, but I say it advisedly. Think of a woman I saw on television the other evening, did you? Sitting with her class of comparatively young children fingering condoms and having them, the kids, laugh their heads off as they were studiously encouraged to indulge in sex almost before puberty. I can think of nothing so calculated to hasten puberty and destroy that beautiful innocence of children before they have to cope with the complications of adult life as they grow to maturity. Oh, they say, children must know. Why must children know things that do not concern them for years yet? Do you think more lives have been ruined by innocent ignorance than by too much knowledge? Some of us were none the worse for not knowing about a great many adult things until the time came for us to cope with them. And the place for such knowledge as may be necessary to protect our young people from the unscrupulous, the place for such knowledge is primarily in the home, parents. I think today, my heart deeply moved as I do so, I think of the awesome modesty of my mother about intimate things, which did more to give me a proper attitude towards sexuality than all their horrid talk about condoms. Oh God, how we should cry to you for the protection of our children from the ravages of sex-obsessed monitors. Talk about the fowler's snare. But I spell the word fowler differently, not with a W, but with a single U, for foul indeed are the minds of many today who want to corrupt our children by the most plausible means at their disposal, so-called education. I know that the meaning of the word education from the Latin educere is to draw forth from or lead out from. And modern methods of education have certainly gone to town in that respect, until instead of inculcating children with facts, They have often been left to their own devices to educate themselves. But you see, to lead forth needs a leader. And it is what a leader leads forth to that is important. And that will depend upon the teachers or the leader's cast of mind. Oh, when we pray for godly leaders of our nation, members of Parliament and the House of Lords, how we should pray for godly teachers. Not men and women with corrupt minds corrupting our bairns. How terrible! I think of some of the answers that the little ones give me on a Sunday morning. And I think, you know, that their percipience and understanding and knowledge of godly things is largely due to sitting at their mother's knees, learning beautiful biblical truths from their mummies, especially as they ask their innumerable questions and are given godly answers from God's holy book. I think godly mothers could teach school teachers a great deal about how to develop a youngster's mind and fill into the huge void of their interminable questions, fill into them whole worlds of facts about things natural and spiritual and eternal, which will prepare them as nothing else in the world can prepare them to cope with all they are going to meet in the great big world out there. And you see, it all comes from him and his book. For our help is in the name, that is, in the nature and the character and the power and the grace of the Lord. Our help is in his name, maker of heaven and earth, the lover of our souls.